Good afternoon, and welcome to the August 4th, 2008 special meeting of the City Council. We have only three items on our agenda this evening, and we will be hearing those three before adjourning, and then the Planning Commission will appear after us. So, we will begin with item B1, which is consideration of a CDBG Planning and Technical Assistance Grant application for a redevelopment feasibility study and adoption of a resolution approving the application and grant agreement. And before I continue, I forgot, there are four members of the City Council present. Council Member Wingholtz was unable to be here today. Okay, so, Bruce.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council Members. This application involves authorizing us to submit an application, hopefully tomorrow, to the Community Development Block Grant Program for a Planning and Technical Assistance Grant for a Redevelopment Feasibility Study. There is a local match required of $5,250, which is available from past CDBG program revenue, and that is a separate fund that the city holds that we could use as a match. There would be no general funds committed towards this feasibility study. And just to remind you, this would be a coupled application. That we're applying for $35,000 under the economic development portion of this, which is the topic of this hearing, and the following hearing is for general allocation, which is another $35,000. So the total grant amount we would be applying for would be approximately $85,750, and the balance beyond the CDBG funds, the $70,000, would be paid through our local match and available program revenue and that CDBG fund that's from years past. So our recommendation then is to open the public hearing, receive public testimony and comments, any questions, and then to adopt for this hearing resolution number 5108, authorizing us to apply for these grant applications. If you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
Any questions for staff?
One quick one. You just now said, Bruce, that you would apply hopefully tomorrow. I'm wondering, is there a due date on this, or when's the latest time to apply?
The notice of funding availability was released last Wednesday, so we're getting on this as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to address the
feasibility study and adoption of a resolution approving the application and grant agreement?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you. Item B2, consideration of community development block grant general allocation planning and technical assistance grant application for redevelopment feasibility study and adoption of a resolution approving the application and grant agreement. Mr. Rembo.
Yes, Madam Mayor, this is the coupled part of the same application we just heard. This applies to the general fund, the general allocation. All of the funding parameters are the same. We're just applying to two pots of funding through the same source. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Our recommendation is that we open this public hearing. We have to submit these as two separate applications. This is why we should do it twice. Open the public hearing, receive the comments, and we recommend adopting the resolution.
Okay. Any questions on this one? This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. And I'll entertain a motion. It's a lot of words. Who wants to do it this time?
Go ahead. Okay, let me turn the mic on. Move approval of adopting Resolution 5208, approving an application for funding in the amount of $35,000 from the Community Development Block Grant General Allocation Planning and Technical Assistance Grant Application for a Redevelopment Feasibility Study and Execution of a Grant Agreement and any amendments thereto.
Second.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, thank you. And item B3, reconsideration of the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval and the City Council's denial of a wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta Avenue. And we have an applicant and appellant. Are representatives from both here, or are we speaking on behalf of one?
Actually, Madam Mayor, staff, Mike Prater, staff for the City of Morro Bay will give a brief presentation.
Okay.
Rachel Grossman is the staff planner that was working on the project and prepared the report. But I'll be giving the presentation, and then we can open it up to the applicant.
Okay, and then
and
do
the
we
appellant.
Have the applicant and appellant both here?
They'll have their opportunity after, yes.
Okay.
So as you had indicated, well, good evening or good afternoon. I don't know, it's kind of an odd time here, but this is a reconsideration of the cell site located at 545 Shasta, which is the St. Peter's Church. Back in, let me look at my notes here. Back in last August, I believe 2007, the Planning Commission considered this project, made an approval of this project, and added some conditions that the top of the cross be no taller than what's current existing there today, and that the they also contain the noise for the generator that was to be part of the project. So with that, that was appealed by local citizens to your council. Your council considered this item in October of 2007. You reversed the Planning Commission's decision and denied the applicant the use of this site for a cell site. TANA's, Telecommunications Federal Act, the FCC guidelines, they all have rules and regulations that govern what you can do and can't do. Primarily, what it kind of boils down to in a synopsis is we're looking kind of at the aesthetics of it, and is it sort of the appropriate location given the need of what the site can offer the city as far as more coverage in this case. So obviously the aesthetics you have seen before. I've got them here on the overhead slide. I don't know how well these are showing up for you, but we're looking at the steeple with the cross at the top. Essentially the height is going to stay the same. Here's a little closer view shot. The cross itself gets a little bit thicker, but essentially represents the same little blue cross that's at the top of the steeple, and that is to hide and conceal the antenna. The component for the equipment area is at the sort of the rear. It will be screened in by a wooden fence. So these are elements that you have seen before and considered. I think some of the new pieces is the applicant Sprint has also prepared a map. It's part of your packet as well of various locations. They're bulleted in little red dots, various locations and explanations as to their attempts to contact the proper owners of that particular site to see if they would grant them a lease option to locate it in those various locations. And you can see they've went around kind of all around that area seeking permission to put up a cell site. They did not obtain any lease agreements with any of those other parties. So the proposed location, the St. Peter's Church is a willing party to enter into a lease with Sprint. And so based on that information, Sprint prepared a coverage map that shows what the coverage looks like. The site that they're in, the white is the area that you get no coverage, yellow being the coverage while you're in a vehicle. The green shaded areas are the coverage that you would get if you're inside of a building. It's a little harder to get coverage inside of the building versus traveling around in your automobile. So you can see right around this general site, there's some lack of coverage in that area, some lack of coverage in the state parks general vicinity. Once you place a cell facility in that location, you can see the coverage picks up quite a bit. You start to even get to have cell reception within your building. So this is sort of the goal of spotting it at this location is to provide that additional coverage for their customers' need. Just to conclude, staff is recommending that you approve the cell site. You'll find in your packet kind of the full packet, the Planning Commission report, also the mitigated negative declaration, which talks about the findings and of the impact on from CEQA standpoint. We've also included findings for approval
that you had on this matter, and also just to let you know about the alternative. If the alternative, staff is recommending that you do uphold the Planning Commission's decision and grant the application, but if you do uphold the appellant's decision again, we will then need to take the steps to immediately set aside the settlement agreement that has previously been approved but was rescinded by council. During your deliberations, you do not need to take that into account. You need to remain unbiased and deliberate on this matter as if it's in front of you, and that we will take the steps, if in fact you do uphold the appeal, we'll take the steps to have that settlement agreement declared null and void by the federal court. So we'll take those steps if that's where you do head on this matter. And then the other item is just to remember to do your ex parte communications.
Okay. Yes, Rick?
I've had no ex parte communication.
Anyone? Melanie?
Before the initial decision, I had talked to the appellants several months ago, but I haven't talked to either party in the last several months.
Okay.
That's the same case. I believe Melody and I spoke to the appellants at the same time, whenever that was, October or whenever that was, I have talked to no one whatsoever since then.
And I haven't had any either.
And then counsel for the appellants will be submitting items for the record. And there was, you might not have saw that, but there was one letter that the city received today from Wally McRae in favor of the project.
Saw that.
Right. Okay.
Okay. All right. Is there a representative of the appellant here? Tricia Knight? Okay. Yes. And how about we go 15 minutes for each side and then have rebuttal and discussion? About 15 minutes for each side, and then we'll have rebuttal and discussion. Is that okay? 15.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
We're asking 20 minutes. I will start. Michael Jenks will speak, and then Barbara Norden will speak. My name is Ann Travers.
Total 20 minutes for all three of you. Okay.
Yeah. We're not that wordy.
Okay.
My name is Ann Travers. I live at 595 Anchor Street next door to St. Peter's Church. Thank you for hearing our appeal again. On October 22, 2007, we came before you to ask that you support our appeal and deny Sprint the permits needed to install 3 cell antenna in the cross at St. Peter's Episcopal Church at 545 Shasta Avenue. There were several concerns that we included in our appeal: an antiquated and inadequate land use ordinance that needed to be amended to manage wireless communication equipment and further technological advances; the precedent of allowing a commercial use in a strictly residential neighborhood; the fact that Sprint had not provided evidence of a service gap. And we ask that you put a moratorium in place to stop all construction and installation of cell equipment until a new ordinance was approved and in place. All of you agreed with the concerns in our appeal, voted 5-0 to support our appeal, and with the city attorney, developed findings to support your decision. In June, you approved an urgency ordinance that put the moratorium in place to stop construction of cell sites in Morro Bay, listing many of our concerns as reasons for the moratorium. You described the existing ordinance as needing a comprehensive update and amendments, deficient in several areas, requiring language to meet future technology and to ensure informed, consistent, uniform, and fair decisions on permit apps that are not explained or are hidden from public scrutiny. What is going on? Let's go back and review the concerns that we brought to you in October and see if we can figure out what has happened. The current zoning ordinance. The urgency ordinance states that the current ordinance is deficient in several areas regarding wireless communication facilities regulations. You agreed and directed staff to undertake a comprehensive update, amend the ordinance, and send it to the Coastal Commission for review. Once it has been reviewed, it will come back here for your approval and will be put in place. Having a commercial use in a residential zone. The urgency ordinance speaks to the need to include in the new ordinance the incompatibility of cell sites in residential neighborhoods. Has Sprint shown that there is a service gap? Sprint attached maps to the settlement agreement, those that were just shown, over a year after it had submitted its application, showing a possible service gap. But a legal opinion your city attorney requested notes that Sprint's online coverage tool reflects blanket coverage of Sprint and Nextel services for the Morro Bay area without any service gap. Is this the best location for a cell site? has city staff researched and compiled a list of appropriate locations? Staff was asked to do that last year. Because of the number of appropriate sites for cell antenna are becoming limited, and because new technology will demand that its equipment be installed as needed, engineers are learning to place antenna up to a mile away from a desired location. Cell sites will not have one vendor, but two, three, or four vendors at one location. How many antenna will be allowed at St. Peter's Church? Our neighborhood has been compared to the neighborhood surrounding Twin Dolphins Motel, which is a cell site. Both sites are zoned R2, but the neighborhoods are quite different. The Twin Dolphins Motel is surrounded by commercial uses. It is one block from Main Street, one block from the Embarcadero, and two blocks from Morro Bay Boulevard. It is clearly a mixed-use zone. Probably less than 50% of the property is residential. Our neighborhood is residential only. So what's changed between October 2007 and August 2008? Sprint filed a lawsuit and threatened the city with costly legal action. That's the only reason that we can see to explain the actions you've taken over the past few months. You link the implementation of the moratorium to the approval of the settlement agreement so that the actions you took would be hidden from Morro Bay citizens. You overturned our appeal to save money. If you had used the need to update and amend the current land use ordinance as the only reason for your actions, you probably could have provided the substantial evidence required by the Telecommunications Act. The language in the new ordinance will provide a consistent and fair decision-making process for processing permit applications. If you had put a moratorium in place last October, there may not have been a lawsuit. We are asking you once again to support our appeal and deny Sprint the permits needed to install cell antenna in our residential neighborhood. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Council, Mayor, Madam Mayor. My name is Michael Jenks. It's a use that I'll return to, but I'd like to use the planning department's presentation maybe as a jumping off point, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the Federal Telecommunications Act. You'll see in this memo I refer to it as the 900-pound gorilla in the room. It is certainly not local government friendly, but I think most of you know I primarily represent public entities and have been dealing with cell issues for public entities for over 15 years. But it's also not quite the draconian legislation that some make it out to be. And I think it's very important to understand that the planner made a statement about it. It's pretty well limited, or I understood it to be pretty well limited to aesthetics, and that's just not the case. It's not the case. The Telecommunications Act does broadly preempt state and local regulations that prohibit or have the result of prohibiting telecommunications service. But the statute very specifically and very expressly, in a section titled Preservation of Local Zoning Authority, protects and shields the normal local discretion to determine land uses in the jurisdiction. In fact, it says nothing shall limit or affect the authority of a state or local government. This is, by the way, on page 3 of my of the argument summary. Nothing shall limit or affect the authority of a state or local government or instrumentality thereof over decisions regarding the placement, construction, and modification of personal wireless facilities. You've probably been buried in legalese on this in the past, but what it really comes down to is there are four basic tests of what when you cross the line. First, does your local regulation or the decision to deny a permit alone or in combination create a substantial barrier to entry into or participation in the local telecommunications market? I don't think anyone claims there's any such effect in the way the city has regulated its telecommunications approvals. Second, Does the decision or the regulations prohibit or have the effect of prohibiting wireless services altogether? That also isn't applicable. We have a number of sites here. Three, they unreasonably discriminate between wireless service providers. Well, here you've sort of backed into an interesting situation where you agree to a moratorium and keeping other providers out while you let Sprint in to have the field to themselves for this year. Some other competitor might complain of that. It's not something that the appellants have a great stake in, but it does present another aspect of risk if another competitor looks at this and feels excluded. Finally, if the regulations or the denial prevents a wireless service provider from closing a significant gap in service, and this is where most of the discussion has been placed and where Sprint has attempted to buttress its absence of a showing 287 days ago, controlling here in the Ninth Circuit. I went through the record, and there's nothing having to do with that. Finally, someone mentioned substantial evidence. The standard that this your decision will be reviewed by is substantial evidence. That is less evidence than a preponderance of the evidence. It's less than preponderance. We talk about more likely than not. Substantial is less, but it's more than a scintilla of evidence. It's not a particularly high standard as long as you have some basis for your findings. It's just not the big limitation that a lot of people make out. What is a big limitation is these companies take you to federal court and they're trying to bring up charges of $400, $450 an hour in attorney's fees, and it effectively can extort many, many approvals. They and their bankrolls are really the 900-pound gorilla in the room. Let me quickly go through a couple of procedural points because some of them are serious and potentially fatal. We do have this issue of impartiality. We raised it in our letter to the city attorney a couple weeks ago, where you have a settlement agreement that's been signed on your behalf that's now been built into a judgment and order in federal court, and you're caught in a bind because you're supposed to be totally impartial, and yet there is an existing legal commitment that at least has some risk of enforcement that certainly intrudes upon might intrude upon some person's ability to be totally impartial in this. I let Mr. Schultz know about it early just because I knew this was coming up, and he's obviously made whatever decision he's made about how to handle that, but I wanted to point that out. This is also discussed and summarized in the argument summary. On evidentiary matters, we would ask that the full administrative record from the October 22 hearing be made part of this proceeding. You all sat at that and participated. There's no way to isolate the two hearings, so that record, we believe, should be made part of the hearing record today. And we are asking the council take administrative notice of three items. The Sprint lawsuit, the Sprint settlement agreement, and as your counsel may have told you, the appellants did on the original Brown Act complaint only have till last Friday to file, and they had no choice but to file. So we now have a pending Brown Act declaratory relief action and a request for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction pending in the San Luis Obispo Superior Court. Because of your counsel's absence, we did not schedule the hearing on the TRO last week, but I've talked to him today about it, and we'll be proceeding with that. We continue to have a Brown Act problem today. There's this disconnect between your staff report, which was pretty good at the front end, and what was going to happen, but that didn't make it into the agenda. It's a very confusing and incomplete description further, and this just plain drops it. It's not included, and we would submit under the Brown Act, and especially because this is a special meeting. As you know, the rules about the breadth and scope of your consideration are much more limited with a special meeting to the actual description on the agenda. Reconsideration, I thought, was a clever approach, and I think, and your city attorney helped educate me on your rules. You have a policy that incorporates Robert's Rules of Order. So I looked up motions for reconsideration, and it would not allow this. In fact, this would be untimely under Robert's Rules, which require that reconsideration of an item can only be made on the day the vote to be reconsidered was taken or the next succeeding day, a legal holiday or recess not being counted as a day. Now, your counsel will tell you, and he will be correct, a majority of the council may overrule policies, which are considered directive, if they see fit. But think about the road you're going down. As a city attorney myself, I don't like opening the door and having a precedent for more people to move to reconsider actions and say, well, you did it, you know, two-thirds of a year later, 287 days later for that cell site. Think about the policy, and I think, again, it's just a question of the consistency with your policies and not having to contort your policies too much to try to accommodate this box you're in with the Sprint lawsuit. What's the time, Madam Clerk? Okay. I make some other points about the California Environmental Policy Act and about some of the mitigations, which just are incomplete by any standard. I do a lot of these. You know, the lack of any noise restriction, the vague backup power thing, that's where a lot of the problems come with adding batteries or solar arrays or a generator, and it's just dumped. They will provide backup power for longer service, but it's not specified how that'll be done. That's just one of many. This is in my papers. I'm going to sit down so Barbara can close. Thank you.
And Kimberly, did we give them 20 minutes to start? Did we give them 20 minutes to start? Okay.
My name is Barbara Norton. I live at 595 Anchor Street in Morro Bay. I want to ask you a couple questions. I'm deaf, so if you answer me, you have to answer Anne so she can tell me what you said.
Okay. What we will do is we'll take your questions, and then when you finish speaking, we'll come back and give the answers, okay?
They'll give you your answers at the end.
Okay. I want to know what is going to define the non-moratorium zone or neighborhood. Is it going to be Shasta, Piney, Napa, Monterey, South Street, Anchor, Driftwood, Marino, what?
Okay.
That's one question. My next one is, why was only one part of the settlement, the one part with the settlement, not council person, Winholtz and Demerit stated that Sprint's failed to show a gap in coverage that would be remedied by the proposed site. Council member Graham stated that Sprint and future applicants should consider city-owned property for cell sites located as a revenue for the city. He expressed concern that there was a lack of regulations. Expressly cell site placement provided an incentive to proliferate cell sites in residential area because of revenues to homeowners. Councilman member Pierce expressed opposition to the cell site placement in residential areas.
You can turn it off.
But is not opposed to additional cell sites in non-residential areas, and neither are we. Mayor Peters expressed a desire for updating regulations for all future cell sites and that the Sprint application would be denied on a discretionary grounds as provided by present regulations. Now I want to know what has changed since October 22nd meeting. Was it that you got sued? Did some bully come into the neighborhood and say, hey, I'm going to blackmail you? You give me what I want? Is that what happened? The attorneys said, this is somebody that I guess you hired, and we don't know how much they charged, because first we heard 5,000, then we heard 10, and then we heard 20. But they did say the city may be on more solid footing in the denial of Sprint's application, as there likely exists substantial evidence supporting the city's decision. So now, this wonderful attorney, after saying a whole bunch of things in our favor, goes back and says, hey, I guess you better lay down and let them have what they want. Now, I would like my questions answered, please.
All right, thank you. And is there anyone here from Sprint? No, okay. All right. Pardon? Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I was going to have public comment. I just wondered if there are any comments or questions right now before we went to public comment.
Well, okay. I have a few questions, right. But I'd rather have public comment.
All right, fine. We'll wait then. Okay, this is a public hearing, so anyone wishing to address the council on this issue, please come forward. This is the public comment time.
Your voice is not coming through at
okay.
all.
All right. This is public comment, so if you'd like to address the council on this issue, now's the time to come forward. No? Okay. All right. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. Questions? Who wants to start? Melody?
Yeah, I have questions. Mike, you could help me out with this coverage map. It says on here that it's
the other cell sites that the city has approved were not associated with Sprint. They were their competitor, and so they're not using that location to help facilitate their coverage needs. So, in other words, they don't have a negotiated deal with those other cell providers.
That's talking about different coverage from Sprint and those people. But I'm saying that this is dated 2004. Is that sufficient for a city to determine coverage?
Well, and I think this is the coverage that Sprint is saying they have for their facility, and that's mm-hmm. the latest model that they've run for our area.
Well, even when they talk about after installing this, they still date it as 2004. So I think it's bad business or sloppiness on their part. I'm not sure. We didn't get any. We didn't have coverage maps in front of us initially.
No.
No, we didn't.
No. Okay. I think that was all my questions for right now.
Why don't I go ahead and ask the questions that one of the appellants had for us? The request was for what is the non-moratorium zone boundary? Do we have a response for that?
The moratorium right now would be on all other applications besides for this one that would be submitted no matter where they're located.
Okay. So it's a complete moratorium for the whole city, if you could let her know that. It's a complete moratorium for the whole city, if you could let her know that. That's what our city attorney just told us. Okay. It's a complete moratorium that we instituted recently. Okay. That was the first question. Second one was something about the moratorium was not completely rescinded. I didn't understand the question, quite honestly.
Any of the procedural questions I'm not even going to attempt to answer. They're not part of this hearing. I don't agree with Mr. Jenks. He's already filed a lawsuit, so I'm not going to go into Robert Rules of Order, the moratorium, the reconsideration. I'll let the courts decide that now that he's already chosen to file a lawsuit, and considering his, as he said, was once on the other side of the table, I would be concerned with the conflict of interest more than the procedural due process issues. So I'm not going to address those here. The issue is before you is whether you want to grant the cell site at this property or not. That's the issue in front of you, and whether you find there's substantial evidence in the record to deny it or grant it.
Okay.
I like that. That's a straightforward look at it. I hope we all heard, and I wish you had your computer that's so handy, Rob, but that we all heard that the online coverage map for Sprint, which I've never bothered to look at, that that map now shows, Ms. Travers, just not, shows complete coverage over Morro Bay. Okay. So I don't know. I'm feeling a bit like I did before, and I really care less about any settlement agreement. It's whether or not we need this cell phone tower in this place. And, you know, like she's saying, it's different from the Twin Dolphins because it is a fully residential neighborhood. It's got a, I think, a school and a church, a couple of churches nearby.
I can address the difference in the online coverage maps and the others. If you look at any of the carriers, I'm a Verizon customer, and if you look at their coverage map, all of that stuff online are designed for general consumers, and all of those coverage maps should start with once upon a time because they're very, I think they're very forgiving, if nothing else, whereas this appears to be something they've done in their engineering department. And I could probably, if you had the same thing for Verizon, you would find that the engineers that actually put the cell sites up do one thing, and what they put out there for those of us who want to know whether our phone's going to work are different. So I don't know that they're the same, and that's my speculation, but I've discovered that with Verizon in times past. And I can't speak to Sprint. I'm not a Sprint customer.
And I do defer to your intelligence and all this, but I know it's like you're living. So do you think it's kind of odd that the coverage map is 2004?
I'm going to guess that this coverage map is dated 2004 because that's probably when they put right around the time they were doing the engineering for the site up by your house, up at the top of Radcliffe, because they had to do a lot of work to determine to put it there. I don't know what their rationale was for putting it at the top of Radcliffe, but because everybody else is up at the top of my street, and that happens to be in county territory, or we'd be we would be on record as having a number of cell sites. But they determined that was the best spot for their kind of coverage, and I think that's probably when they started working on this stuff. And that may be why it's 2004. That's just my guess.
If I may interject, Sprint's original application was 2005. That's how long it was around, but it wasn't being pressed for them to come forward with Planning Commission. One of the issues at the federal court is that these maps actually were presented to city back in 2005, and that's why they're dated 2004 and that they have not been updated. There hasn't been any new coverage. No other cell sites have been approved in Morro Bay. So it's it was their position that they were always in the position of the city and should have been presented to city council. You're correct. They were not presented to council in 2007, but one of the arguments and one of the legal arguments that was occurring at that level was these maps were previously produced, and they're the same maps that apply today.
Okay. Well, other questions, Melody, or comment?
I have one more question of Rob, probably. The appellant's attorney gave us this definition of substantial evidence. Do you agree with that definition? It seems extremely broad. I don't know where the source of it is.
It is extremely broad. That's one interpretation of it, but the substantial evidence is less than a preponderance of the evidence. But, you know, it's a standard that's even more, I think, a higher standard in federal court, which was where the lawsuit was. And so the substantial evidence that they were presenting were these coverage maps, even though they weren't part of the administrative record. And one of the differences in federal court is that the administrative record can be supplemented by outside evidence under the Telecommunications Act. So this information was going to come in regardless.
But I also think that in doing some of the reading, things provided to us about the TCA, the Telecommunications Act, that communities have fought against these cell phone sites using the TCA, would you say?
And I really don't factor in the settlement agreement. I really don't care about that. My whole issue this last go-around was making it so that any cell towers could be on city property so city could get the revenue that they would get from the telecommunications company. But Apparently, we didn't have any appropriate locations on our city property. So that's where I am with that.
Bill?
Well, I'd still like to see us have the ability to regulate where these things could go, and if and when someday in my lifetime the Coastal Commission ever gets around to opening the cover on our zoning ordinance, maybe we'll be able to do that. But they haven't seen fit to support us in that manner. I would have liked to have seen at the time these coverage maps, because the coverage maps, I think, do indicate a purpose, a reason that Sprint had for coming along and doing this. And they answered one of my questions. As far as the settlement agreement, that's what we have lawyers for. I don't get into that. We have Rob on the payroll, and somebody somehow, somewhere is going to sue us on this thing, and that's what you're here for. So that's not an issue.
Okay. Couple of questions that I had. CEQA review, is that part of this?
It already went through the CEQA and was approved. The CEQA did was properly noticed in front of the Planning Commission, was okay. Approved by them, but you also.
Oh, it's not just me.
These special meetings are a bummer, aren't they?
Yeah. The CEQA was approved with proper noticing at the Planning Commission hearing. Procedurally wise, this is a nightmare, but it was already done. But I'm asking you to even reapprove that from the Planning Commission previously, and it is a properly noticed. And if you do approve it, it is part of your motion, which would be A, B, and C, all three of those I want you to approve.
Okay, and notice has been correct on all of that. Okay. And the reconsideration timing, seems to me we've done that before, where it's the next meeting that we have where we can bring something back for reconsideration.
Again, I'm not going to go into, you're asking about procedural issues, and those, he's already filed litigation on those issues.
Okay.
So I'm not going to make any statement on that other than I believe we've properly done it.
Okay.
The term reconsideration was just that, to give proper notice, not in the terms of Robert Rules of Order. This is a fresh, entirely new look at it, whether you call it a reconsideration, a brand new look, if you want to call it that. But proper notice, we re-notice completely within the 300-foot radius.
Okay. All right. Comments?
I have one more question, I think. I see your order of actions down here, but what's the order if we want to find in favor of the appellants?
That's on the second page, was the alternative I've given you.
Okay. So it's simply upholding our action of the appeal.
And directing staff.
They were late on their application. I think that it makes their initial application incomplete, basically. And I also think that they're old and out of date, and I don't think any company running business nowadays ought to have a if they're negotiating to put a cell phone tower in 2007, they ought to have a coverage map for 2007. And that's what their engineers are paid to do. But mostly, I'm going to rely on the Federal Telecommunications Act to protect this community. And I'm going to try to vote to uphold the initial appeal.
In what way are you relying on the act? I mean, in what way is it?
In the ways that the attorney for the appellants told us, that this creates no substantial barrier to entry into participation in local market, blah, 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 all these four parts, and now the substantial evidence thing. I think that the federal, and also some of the quotes that you can see in the packet here from other cases in other jurisdictions where the TCA has basically protected the local jurisdiction. When we've decided that we don't want certain things done in parts of our community because they have not shown us coverage maps on time, they didn't show us coverage maps that were dated recently enough. I think it was incomplete, and now the city has this moratorium. And I'd say, well, if you want to come back with coverage maps at this point and date them for 2008, say, you fall under the moratorium, but they didn't even have them. I mean, and I was opposed to this initially, and nothing here has changed my mind. I don't think it belongs in that neighborhood.
Okay, Rick?
Well, for the sake of time, I'll just say I haven't changed my mind either since we took that vote the last time. I think I seconded Melody's motion on that, so I'm going to stick with that.
Which vote are you talking about? I'm sorry, we voted on this twice now. To uphold the appeal.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
Well, it looks like it's going to go 2-2. And or 3-1. I'm sorry.
Don't make assumptions.
I'm not making any assumptions. I would at this point consider denying the appeal, but I may be the lone ranger here.
Okay. I've got several things that I've been thinking about through this whole thing from the get-go. First of all, nothing has been hidden from public scrutiny. Absolutely nothing. We have had several public hearings on this. There has not been anything done beyond those public hearings other than anything that legitimately belonged in a closed session discussion. So I want to get that cleared up right away. We don't do things that way, and don't shake your head, because we don't. Not while I'm mayor. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the lady behind you. That's not how we do business in this city. The public hearings are what they have been. If we did have anything in closed session, it was legitimately discussed in closed session. As far as any discussions that any one of us have had outside, you've just heard that we had none. My concern with this is, I agreed the first time, I didn't think it was appropriate in a residential area. However, we don't have anything that disallows it in a residential area on our books, and we needed to get that. And we've had other situations where that's existent as well. The most recent one I can come up with is the parks. It's not something I like. It's not something I'm happy to have to enforce, but it is what it is. So there we are. As far as what's changed, we have a city attorney who gives us advice on what is the best, his best advice on what the city should do legally in a situation. And his feeling on this, my interpretation of it, was that Sprint had the right to sue us were we not allow this, because we simply didn't have anything on our books that said we didn't have to. And a lack of enforcement on our books is something that we can get sued for if we say, oh, no, we're not going to just because we don't want to. That's not a legal response. We have to have some written policy, rules, regulations to enforce that. That's my understanding of how the law works. So relying on that, that's why I changed my mind on it and approved the reconsideration. It's getting confusing how many different times we've looked at this. So here we are.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
May I ask Mr. Prater just one more question, a point of clarification?
Sure.
I think that this project asks for a conditional use permit, true?
Yes.
Okay. And why does it ask for a conditional use permit? Is there any variance involved in this about height on the tower? Or?
No, there's no variances with this, but a conditional use permit is a discretionary permit.
Right. And it is at the discretion of the city council, isn't it?
Yes.
As I remember my zoning book, I don't have it with me, but I believe that
right.
When we get these, it's is that it, Mr.
Right.
Ambrose?
You're looking at all of the evidence in the record,
right,
and making a decision.
So in looking at all the evidence of the record, we get elected to sit up here and have some discretion about these particular permits. True? Okay. With that, I would make a motion that we uphold the appeal of Ms. Travers and Ms. Norden and deny this wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta Avenue.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, further discussion? Is there anything else you want to say?
Nope.
All right. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. So here we are, 2-2 with a four-person board. Is that an automatic failure?
Yes, it is. I would say we continue it, because we'll have a fifth person, unless there's more debate that can go. But for
can
right
we
now.
Can we continue it under the terms from that attorney out there? Or?
Under what terms?
Well, I don't know.
I'm
I
not listening
there was some...
to that attorney out there. You can continue this matter to a date certain if you want to, so that we don't have to renotice it, and we can take it up with the third member. It may be difficult from the standpoint of making sure that she's rehabilitated on all the evidence, but in front of her. But we can.
She can watch this meeting.
All right. Yes.
Well, then I would make a motion that we continue it to our next regularly scheduled meeting.
Is that sufficient notice? Yeah, we can go ahead. Meeting on Monday when we will have a full council available.
And will that again be a public hearing?
Yes. All right. Anything else?
Let me clarify then, Mr. Schultz. Since we continued it, that negated the previous motion that went 2-2.
Correct. That motion failed.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, then we are adjourned. Thank you.